I think it's only fitting to start this episode off just with a big, deep sigh, because, oh man.
Oh, you are teeing this up so good. Enzo, to me, looks like a more agile, basically a young Chess Fabregas.
It's a Rolls Royce, man. Gotta sell it.
Messi is the Jorginho of international football. That was a dumb take.
Welcome to another episode of the Flag Stays Down podcast. New host edition? Question mark? I don't know why I'm hosting this week, but we're switching things up. You got a full house tonight on a different night just due to some scheduling conflicts, but I'm your host tonight. I'm Parker, DJ Parkour. You got Andy in the house, got Matt in the house. So boys, how are we doing today on a Tuesday? It's rare that I see you on a Tuesday, but how are we doing this Tuesday? I'll kick it to you first, Matt.
Doing good. Been a busy few days with getting things ready for my son's birthday party over the weekend. So for me, that meant get the basement finished. So was able to get that done. I'm more excited that I got my new TV in the basement. So that's pretty awesome. But yeah. It was a good time. Little man destroyed a cupcake, so very proud of him for that. Yeah, it was a good time. Good to see some people. You know, he's super excited about, you know, some of his new gifts. He got a ball pit, which has 400 plastic balls in it. So I can't wait to come across those in the middle of the night for just random reasons. Super, super stoked about that. But no, everything is good. And then just transitioning into a long work week, where one of our vendors is on site, today and tomorrow. And then, we had some of my coworkers who are remote. They also came in for this event. So just a lot of work and a lot of post-work events. So trying to balance everything and, you know, we're here. So. Always a good time. So not complaining too much. Collins, how are you?
I'm buzzing tonight. First of all, I don't have to host. Thank you to Parker. Second, US Open Cup is back. Ford Madison played tonight, beat Duluth FC 2-0. So they're on to the second round. But I guess I'm going to take my time here to bash Don Garber and MLS. Was at a Sporting Kansas City game this weekend, and I don't know, it comes off as all manufactured. And, you know, with the refs striking and MLS not paying them, the officiating was shitty, to say the least. But then, you know, Garber wants to blame everything on schedule congestion, and he'll just keep making up new tournaments and ignore things like the 100-year-old U.S. Open Cup. You know, we saw a cup set tonight. For those paying attention, Vermont Green, semi-pro, 4,000 people in the house, upset third division side, Lexington, 4-3. Just one of those fun cup matches that you get to see in a tournament like this. And, you know, I wish our nation's top league would be a part of it. But that's enough of me on my soapbox. Parker, how are you doing?
Yeah, can you imagine the Premier League boycotting the FA Cup? Just how ridiculous that would be to the sanctity of what that cup means. Kind of ridiculous, man. Something's got to change with the MLS. It sucks. But I am doing well. I've had a great day today. Matt, you talk about your one-year-old. I am a 33-year-old child with adult money. And I had an adult day today, boys. I over lunch, I went to a tap house and grabbed myself a couple slices of pizza. Grabbed myself a couple beers and played some pinball, went back to work, left work, went back to a different bar, grabbed a couple beers, played some more pinball. Now we're here. I had mac and cheese for dinner tonight, poured myself a drink, and now we're podcasting. So it's an adult day, and I have no shame about it. It's just one of those, I mean, it's gorgeous here. It's like 70 degrees in Colorado today. Everyone's outside. Everyone wants to be outside. Got back, walked the dogs. It's just, everyone wants to be a little bit more social and have a couple of drinks. So it's just been one of those good days. And, so I've been able to enjoy it. And this is a relatively calmer time for work for me. So it, you got to take those opportunities when you can, when you're busy, like you are right now, Matt, you're in it. Can't do it. So when you've cut a little bit of the break, then you got to take advantage of it. But the other fun thing I wanted to bring up to the group is this jersey that I'm wearing today is it's courtesy of my little brother. So shout out to C Gross. He got this for me when he asked me to be in his wedding, which is coming up just after the first of next year. So he got me the green new Chelsea jersey with Mudrick on the back. So Mudrick is his guy. If you know Connor, he's a little bit swaggy. He likes the players that play with a little bit of flair and neck tattoos and or are Cameroonian in nature. So he likes those players, and he's been a big fan of Mudrick. And he was a little bit reluctant to give it to me. He was like, I don't know how you feel about Mudrick, man, but I had to do it. He's like, I was going to do this for Silva. And I was like, I'm happy you got the Mudrick. Like, that's it's a sick jersey. So now Mudrick has to stay. Matt, if you got this jersey, he'd be gone for sure. So he's got to stay for a while and live up to this 7-8 year contract, right? So I haven't had a full jersey sweep in, I don't think ever. I don't think I've ever had all three jerseys. And although one of them was a bootleg Chinese jersey, I'm still counting it as a sweep. So shout out to the kids this year. I think they're a little bit better than average. So take it. Well, boys, we've got a couple of topics I wanted to talk about and some of, you know, what's going on with the team, but got to start with, you know, the match against Leicester. If this doesn't like summarize a perfect Chelsea match this season, I don't know what really does. I mean, it's a 4-2 win that was not calmed by any stretch of the imagination. It got started off with Cucurella having basically a tap in of a goal. Cole Palmer scores. Raheem Sterling misses a penalty. Axel Disasi scores an own goal. Leicester have a sort of a wonder goal themselves to tie it up. And then at the end, you know, at the 91st minute, Carney Chukwuemeka makes it 3-2. And then Noni Madueke out of nowhere kind of pulls off a ridiculous goal where he's bouncing off of players and finds a way to make it 4-2 in the depths. So Collins, what are your first thoughts? What are your first takeaways from the match?
Well, even though it's against championship opposition, it's nice to see the boys look good. And there were stretches where it was not good. But, you know, in front of goal, we continue to play well. And it might just be flashbacks to last year when we did not play well in front of goal. And so this year just seems great. I'm not sure. But it was nice to see Cucurella get his first Chelsea goal. You know, he's going to be our long-term left back, Matt. But then my guy Axel Disasi scores a great goal. Mudrick has a great game. Cole Palmer, as always, and Nico Jackson involved in yet another role. So it was a good weekend.
Yeah. To be fair, Disasi put that in a great spot. I think even if Sanchez was in the right position, he still wouldn't have stopped it. So kudos to Disasi. It had all the feels, right? We like to joke about, you know, like the John Terry hat trick, right? It kind of felt like that as a Chelsea performance overall. You had some good, you had some bad, you had some ugly. Luckily, the good outweighed the other two. So happy about that. It was a different look. It was good to see that we can kind of come back from kind of getting smacked around early in that second half. We did not look great coming out of that second half. Obviously, the De Sassi own goal kind of swayed the momentum in a big way for Leicester. That excellent, it was just an excellent hit. I mean, there's nothing any keeper could have done. It was a great hit. What's that? Mavidi, something like that. It was a great hit. Can't really argue too much. But then, you know, immediately I'm thinking, oh boy, now this is kind of what we've come to expect, right? Collins, you said it best, like flashbacks to last year. Like, okay, we've seen the script before. We know how this goes. But then to see the boys fight and keep pressing and, you know, then you see the youth come in, right? You're not expecting, at least for me, I'm still trying to figure out what Carney is, kind of what his role is. That's not to say I don't think he has a lot of potential or anything. I just haven't seen enough of him to know, like, or to have the confidence in him that, like, yeah, if we put him on, I have all the faith in the world he's going to score a goal. I just personally haven't seen enough of him to think that yet. Noni, I mean, when he's getting his opportunities, he's taking them now. I'm a little bit upset that we're not seeing more of him, especially when we talk about, you know, the Raz performance that was put out there. You know, I'd like to see him get a little bit more of a trot out, but it's good to see them show up in big moments, right? We needed a goal and they each were able to put one past. So I'm happy that they're capitalizing on those opportunities and kind of showing that they're ready for the moment. So all in all, right, like, it's a big win. And it's definitely a win that I think we needed. Not badly, but it keeps us trending in the right direction. I think a loss would have definitely deflated a lot of momentum that we've kind of built up to this point. So I think that win kind of helps keep us pushing in the right direction.
Yeah, when I look at the list of our fixtures, you know, throughout the season, this feels like kind of our second best like run of form that we've had. You know, just looking at it on paper, since we lost 4-1 to Liverpool and then 2-4 to Wolves, and that's when all the smoke around Pochettino was, right? That's when everyone was calling for his head. Boys didn't respond in the game against Wolves that we should have had that response game. The response came, you know, one game too late, but after that it's win-win draw, loss against Liverpool in the cup final, you know, 117th minute Virgil header that goes in, and then win, draw, win, win. So aside from that hard fought game against Liverpool, it's been a really decent run of form. And what's kind of pissing me off is we have these runs of form, but I think a lot of our best games have been in cup matches, which is frustrating because it doesn't show up in the Premier League standings. And so this team feels so much better than 11th. When I watch us play, and yeah, I know a 4-2 win at the Depps against championship side Leicester isn't one to, you know, tip your cap to and say, like, you know, we're winning the league kind of form. I get it, but we're winning games. We're finding a way to win games. And that's something that's new to us. That's something that we didn't have a lot of last year. It's something that we haven't had a lot of this year, where it's like, we've seen the script and we don't cave. We lost a lot of those games last year. We lost a lot of those games earlier this year. And that's what's got me excited again about this team, which is going to give me hope, which is going to then crush me eventually. And so the cycle continues. But I see growth in this team, and I see growth in a lot of our players. And this team is forming. And I think, you know, Nico Jackson's been one of the top growth performances this year, where he has settled down a lot and he has played, you know, this has been his best stretch of form. And even in a game where he doesn't score against Leicester, Nico played great and he's involved in a lot and he's involved in the buildup, and he had scored in the two prior games, and he's been active and he's been good. And those are fun things to see, because in a year where you don't have much to cheer about and you're not really playing for Europe, kind of are still a little bit, but not really. I'm still like taking some of those nuggets to the bank, but the form, the cup form
has me excited that you know, we can still come to play when the time comes. And like our form against City this year also excites me. It's going to get tested right in the semis. We play them again, and that's where it's really going to matter in a semifinal at Wembley. But call me crazy, boys, but I kind of like our chances.
Yeah. We've been trending up. You know, basically what you were alluding to there. And we've hung with City in two differently played games. One where we sat back and we just took it until we, you know, could break on the counter, and one that was free flowing and just a crazy watch. I don't know what to expect in the third game. In a cup semifinal, I kind of don't want to see either of those, but I like that we're scoring goals. Now how do we defend?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, again, it the luck of the draw, which usually is not favorable for us. Like, I forgot who gets Coventry. Is that United?
United. Yeah, they beat Liverpool.
Yeah, how that happened is beyond me. But and then they end up with Coventry. So again, you know, it's, you know, the draw is the draw, right? You do with you play the only team that's on the opposing side of the pitch. But it's going to be one of two things. It's either going to be one of those back and forth games like we've seen so far this season, or somebody is going to get the upper hand. I don't see it being a 1-1. I see it being like a 3-1 or a 4-1. I'm not sure what side, because I feel like it could go either way. But I feel like it's going to either be, you know, a barn burner of a game, or one team is just going to get the upper hand and run with it. But either way, I'm excited for it. And we'll see what happens come game day.
To be fair to United, they did have the hardest draw with getting Liverpool. So at least they didn't play nobodies on their way to the semi, whereas, you know, City had Newcastle, which isn't an easy draw, and we had Leicester. So we kind of lucked out in the round prior, so I won't be too hard on it. The other thing that I'll contradict myself on and say is we likely won't get as lucky as we got last time we played City, with Erling Haaland having like an XG of 7 and not converting any of them. I exaggerate, but he blew goals that he doesn't normally blows. So I would expect him to put one or two of those away like he did the first time that we played him, and you know, have a little bit of a more contested match from that perspective. So I'm excited for it, though. It's going to be great. I think Wembley's always an atmosphere that we, you know, try to show up for, and it'll be fun. And it's a chance for us to really have like a moment for this team in a year where we don't really have that. But switching gears to probably the highlight of this year, he's my player of the year, but Cole Palmer. Quick question, just kind of rapid fire, but what is his ceiling? It was kind of a question I was thinking about when watching the match, and he's had a fantastic year. Our team has had a down year, right? So he's standing out. He's putting up Jude Bellingham numbers, and Jude Bellingham has got Ballon d'Or shouts, you know, when he's playing at Real Madrid. Cole Palmer's numbers look a lot like Jude's, and obviously no one's talking about him in the same right, but what is his ceiling? Like, how good can Cole actually be?
Collins, I want to get your thoughts before I give mine.
See, and I feel like I'm going to set the ceiling too high here, set him up for failure. But at the age of 20, he's, you know, like you said, pulling off crazy numbers like a Ballon d'Or candidate. I think when it's all said and done, he could be on the same level as Luka Modric, Kevin De Bruyne. They're just smart, very high IQ players who can put the ball exactly where they need it to be. again, might be optimistic, but that's what it looks like it's trending towards.
And so I'm going to throw out a Chelsea name. I don't know how you guys are going to react to it, but this is just kind of what I'm thinking about. I see him kind of like a Juan Mata. I see him as somebody who, he's not always going to be your leading scorer, but he is going to get, he's going to get his, right? He's going to have, you know, probably 10 goals, probably 10, 15 assists. I think he's going to fall. I think he fits kind of nicely into that. He's, I think as this is kind of his first year in the Premier League, right? Like full on just getting after it. I think once teams kind of start focusing in on him, I think his role as like kind of the primary is going to fall off a little bit. But I kind of see him as being like that sneaky good player that, you know, does a lot of things, creates a lot of chances, gets his, but doesn't have to be the focal point of everything. So I kind of, that's why I kind of look at somebody like a Juan Mata, right? When he was with, you know, Hazard and things like that, he wasn't always the guy, but he was still producing what he needed to help the team. And that's kind of where I see Cole Palmer fitting in nicely. I see him very much in that similar role as Juan Mata, which is not a knock at all. I think that's just kind of where I think he'll end up fitting best as he's kind of growing into his Premier League career.
I like the Juan Mata shout. It's a sneaky good shout, and I like the comp. You know, as I think about sort of my tenure as a Chelsea fan and some of the greats that I've played, you know, there's Eden Hazard who kind of ruled for a long time, and I don't see anyone touching that level for quite some time. Eden Hazard was special. But I think Cole Palmer has the opportunity to be the next, the closest person to him, I guess, or the second, the second leading person in that race. So not overtaking Eden Hazard by a long shot, but will be the leader of the team. The thing about Juan Mata is he had an Eden Hazard to take a lot of the smoke away from him. Whereas like, I think about like Willian, where Willian was our player of the year a couple of years and was the main focal attacker and had a lot of attention around him. I think Cole Palmer will be that, but has the ability to be better than what Willie was. So Willian was one of my favorite players in that era. And, you know, I think he's got the abilities to score more goals than Willian, have more assists. That back flick assist, holy shit. And that was the winner, right? I mean, that was the assist to Carney for the winner. And just to know where he's going to be on that backflip, I don't think people are talking about that as much as like they should be. And it was kind of a crazy assist. And it was just blew my mind when it happened in real time. I was pretty calm all match. And then I saw that and I got up and I was yelling. I was yelling at my TV. And then when Noni hit it, I was ecstatic just because it was kind of the exclamation point on the match, but still. Cole's exciting. He's dynamic. He brings a lot. And I think his ceiling's pretty damn high. I don't think he's going to get Ballon d'Or shouts just the way our team is built. I think it's more of a European. We've had many Ballon d'Or debates on this podcast. We don't need to get into that today, but it's more of a European Spanish award, and it has been for a long time. And so he might not get those same shouts, but I think he's in that realm, and I think you're going to see him feature for the England team here coming up pretty soon, if not at the Euros, you know, World Cups and things in the future, and people are going to start to see and notice like what kind of level he actually plays at. So I'm excited for Cole. Him and Gusto, man, have been the shock and the wonder of this season. Just like, where do these two 20-year-olds come from? And we're lucky to have them. And I like Collins that you said De Bruyne, because we were the ones that sold De Bruyne, and then he had this glory for City for how many years, right? I feel like this could be the reverse of that, which we will gladly take.
And I think, so this just kind of came to my mind, but I think like if we're looking at current state, right? Like, where is he right now? Like, what would be a comp for him right now? If we're talking about, you know, Chelsea players, prime Oscar. I think that that fits him perfectly, especially, you know, we've talked about, you know, what is Cole Palmer's best position? Is it out wide? Is it as, you know, as that 10? I think with what we saw with Oscar, right, we saw a lot of great things out of him. And then he obviously made the financial decision to go play in Asia. But I think you can make the argument that right now, Cole Palmer is just as good, if not slightly better, than Oscar was in his prime.
Well, with the Euros coming up, and Palmer, I assume, is going to get called up or has been called up. Where does he fit in that squad? I don't think he's going to start over Bukayo Saka on the right. Does he? Who would he unseat in the center of the pitch?
Don't know if he has the ability to unseat Saka, especially because Saka's played at that international level before and is also kind of a generational talent. So he might not, but you could play on the left, you could play in the middle, definitely sub in. I mean, you know, I don't even know. Did Mason Mount make the team? Like, you look at guys like that that have kind of been staples, quote unquote, in the team, and you're playing an informed Cole Palmer over any of those guys, right? Like, there's a lot of that England team that's a little bit stale, and I think Cole provides a little bit more energy.
Yeah, the only thing I can think of is if somebody like a James Maddison, I think he would have a chance there just because of Madison's role as kind of that 10, that central attacking mid. I think he would have a shot there. You know, and depending on what kind of formation Gareth Southgate decides to run with, you need somebody to play behind Kane to kind of open him up. And I think Cole Palmer would be a great choice. We've seen what he can do with his link up play. And some of the assists that he's had have just been spectacular this year. So I could definitely see that as an option.
Cool. So switching gears, I want to pick your guys' brain on another positional debate. Collins, you and I had a little bit of this a week ago. Now we got the full squad, so I want to get Matt's opinion on this as well. I think, you know, when you look at our positions, you look at our team, the way we line up, we've got a lot of, I'll call them locks or semi-locks, where we have a pretty good idea of who's playing there when everyone's healthy. Left back is one of those positions that is not locked up. We've had kind of a rotating door. We've had, you know, Ben Chills. We've had Cucurella. We've had Levi Colwell. Probably forgetting one or two or three other ones. We've had Malo Gusto play there. What's the future of the left back role? And I'm thinking more broadly than just this year. What does that position look like starting day next year or into the future? I'll kick it to you, Matt.
So I talked about this, or we've all kind of talked about this probably a few months ago. I think it depends on who's playing that left wing. Like, we talked about the issue with running Chills and Mudryk at the same time. They both get very far forward, especially Chills. Mudryk, we know, doesn't track back the greatest. And then, you know, if you pair him, if you pair Mudryk with Cucurella, like we saw, you have Cucurella, who's definitely more defense minded and definitely not going to make those same runs to be in the attack as predominantly as Chilwell. If you're, you know, running somebody else out there who will track back, then, you know, I think that's a different story. But to me, it depends on who plays that left wing. I don't think it's necessarily like one over the other. It's just what's going to be the pairing that's going to work the best. So I think it's a combination of that. I don't think there is necessarily a wrong answer because I think they're both playing well right now. It's good to see Cucurella back. Just because, you know, we've seen Chills just have kind of some nagging injury things kind of creep up. We know about the history with him. I really think the pairing on that left side is what's going to dictate who is playing that left back position. Again, I don't think there's a wrong choice, but I think it's more than just one or the other. I think there's more that goes into that decision.
I think I like Cucurella, as you know. You know, is he a long-term fit? No. Is he a long-term, I don't want to say squad player, but somebody who plays pretty frequently? Yeah, I think so. I think they're going to go out and get somebody this summer. Chilwell, I think if you get the right offer for him, and the right offer is pretty low, to be fair, probably in the 20s, I would say. I think you got to take it. Next year is the last year of his original contract. He just signed an extension, I think actually a couple weeks ago. But next year is the end of the original contract. So that means his transfer fee, there's no amortization after next year on that. So I think that comes in at about 11 million pounds. So if you get 25 for him, that adds to the profit, right? The FFP or whatever the new PRS, whatever it happens to be coming into effect, that's going to help you there. So not only from an injury and a sporting standpoint, but for a hopefully we get to play in Europe standpoint.
Long term, I think both of them are gone. Maybe not at the start of next season, but I think by the end of next season, both of them are gone. I think we sell Chills, and I think we'll probably get good offers for Cucurella, especially if he's playing consistently. That Malo Gusto as a backup on the left can play both, helps us a lot. He's 20, and if he's not on the right, he can be on the left. So that helps us a lot. And God, I'm hoping and praying that Reece James has a healthy next season so we can utilize a Malo Gusto on the left side. But I think we, to your point, Collins, I think we go out and get one. The name I've been saying for a couple of months now is Alphonso Davies. So I think he's coming. And then I think we listen to offers. I think we, both of them can go, in my opinion. I like Mark Cucurella, and I think he was like really in the right place, the right time against Leicester. He got a lot of shout outs for it. He defended a lot of crosses well, especially, we don't have to talk about Robert Sanchez right now, but especially because Robert Sanchez wasn't doing his job to collect the balls that were coming his way. Cucurella definitely cleaned a lot of that up. But he has his moments. He definitely has his shaky spells, and we saw a good game out of him, but I won't let that cloud my full evaluation of his talent and say he's probably not the guy going forward that we need there. So it'll be an interesting one if we sell people before we buy, or if we buy before we, you know, how the timing of all that works, because if we go out and splash cash on an Alphonso Davies, then I think people will have fire sale mentality on one of those two and lowball those offers because they know we don't need three left backs. And left back has been one of those positions where I feel like we've had a lot of them and none of them have been great. You know, we had like five of them on the roster a year ago, and it's like, oh, do we need an Ian Mattson, even though he's, you know, doing good things for Dortmund right now? Probably not, because we have a lot of them and they're all mid, they're all average, and none of them are standout. So Reece James is elite when healthy. He's one of the best in the world. I want another one of those. Not saying that that's necessarily Alphonso Davies, but could be.
And I think the other thing is, Parker, like you said, finding that left back is not easy. And if teams know that they have one, they are not giving that player up, whatever the offer is. Like, so I think with what we have now, I could say it's stellar, but we've seen the moments and we've seen the games where, you know, talking about City, the last City game, you didn't hear a word about Phil Foden on the right. Chills had him completely locked down. So we know he can do that. We know Cucurella can do that too. It's the consistency in which they do that. Granted, you're not always going up against the City or whatever. But I think for what we have now,
if we do not find that left back, I think what we have is good enough to still be able to put together a solid defense, right? Especially if we have Reese healthy, and I'm very leery about running both Reese and Malo Gusto, just because if you burn both of them in one game and you need, and then Reese goes down, then you need Gusto to play back to back. So I would love to see it, but I'm also very hesitant to do that. But I think what we have right now, it's not like left back is a glaring issue. I think we have, you know, some other things that we can definitely look at too, but what we have now is not bad at all. It's better than most, not as great as others. So I wouldn't be surprised if we hang on to one of them a little bit longer. I'm not sure which one that's going to be. I do think that depends on what kind of offers they're getting and who's coming in, but it's not like we are in desperate need for a left back. It's kind of where I'm getting at. Like, what we have right now is definitely more than, you know, sufficient for our needs right now.
Well, I think you can get some pretty decent left backs, you know, not elite, but pretty decent ones for a bit of a cost savings if you get rid of one of our current ones. Anthony Robinson, I can't imagine, is going to command a huge fee from Fulham. He's Premier League proven. He's young, gets to the American audience. I think he could be a fit there. Or a wild card here, Alejandro Balde from a cash-strapped Barcelona, who's going to want to make sure they're within FFP and all of that. He's young. He fits the under-25 mold. You know, we've got plenty of Spanish speakers on this squad. I think that would be an interesting transfer. But again, I think you can get players better than what we currently have for deals this year.
I'm going to go off script here for just a second because of something you said, Collins. Joe Cole just recently was in the press, and he had a comment about the transfer policy, the youth that we brought in. And what he said was, you know, I'm happy with the young talent that Chelsea assigned. How about now sprinkle in a little bit of experience? And so just quickly, do you agree with that? Disagree with it? Do you think we should still keep going kind of U25 squad and keep building for what is a future, probably 2-3 years down the road? Or do you think this squad could be really enhanced with a little bit of experience?
I think both. I think the majority of our transfers should be under 25s. Todd Boehly is famously quoted as saying he wants to be five deep at every position with the top youngsters in the world. That's a great way to build long-term success. But at the same time, if you bring in 1 to 2 veterans every window or every summer window, that's going to go a long way. What we've seen this year is that our team lacks leadership. And so you do need a little bit of that to bring along these young guys. But the focus should still stay with younger transfers.
I think you do need that bit of experience. We're losing that, you know, Cucurella. If we do get rid of the left backs, right? Just using them as an example, you get rid of Chills, who's one of the elder statesmen on the team. Get rid of Cucurella, also kind of in that same boat. You're losing Thiago Silva. Who's your oldest player on the squad then? Raz at 30, and that's one player out of a team of, for all intents and purposes, kids. You need that veteran leadership from somewhere. Raz doesn't strike me as the veteran presence in a locker room. Just never kind of fit that mold for me. So you need to bring in somebody that has some of that leadership quality that can help kind of guide a lot of these young players kind of on their paths. I like the idea of sprinkling in, you know, more experience, but I don't want to do it at the cost of, you know, yes, let's bring in, I'm just going to say like a David Alaba, right? Like bring in somebody like that who is going to take away those crucial minutes from, you know, young players and stuff like that. Like, I don't want to see that. I want to see, you know, something where we get good value for the player, both on and off the pitch.
And I think one of the names that was like kind of floated in these comments was Luka Modric for a year. I don't think it needs to be that big of a name or that like caliber of a level of a player, to your point, Matt. I want someone that is Gallagher, but has done it for 10 years, you know, like just a more experienced workhorse of a guy. I'm thinking someone like Cesar Azpilicueta towards the end of his career at Chelsea, someone who's willing to work, fight for the badge, and really lead by example. And the problem right now is our experience hasn't been able to do that. Raz is the most, you know, one of the oldest guys on the team, and Silva is the other oldest guy on the team. Both are out of form right now. Both are out of favor from a fan's perspective and from a team perspective, especially Silva. So Silva's not leading on the pitch anymore. And Raz definitely isn't leading on the pitch. He's going the other way, right? He's almost like, this dude needs to get off the pitch so some of these young kids can come in and do their thing. So he has the exact opposite effect of what we're looking to do. We need players who are willing to work hard, give it their all, and really, you know, demonstrate that. And then when things don't go your way, it's like that cool under pressure, like, all right, we're good, right? Like, as all athletes in this chat here, you know, sometimes you need to fire up, sometimes you need to cool back. Sometimes you need to go, sometimes you need to pull it back a little bit. And then a good leader knows, you know, what strings to pull to get the most out of their players and what to say in those situations. And that's, there's no book on that. That's all gut. That's all knowing your guys. And, you know, they're good locker room guys, but they're good leaders on the pitch. So I would take one or two of those in the team, period. I don't need one or two every single window. I just need one or two of those, period, to really help solidify, because I can see Silva leaving and I can see Raheem Sterling leaving in the next window, which it's kind of then a free-for-all with a bunch of kids. Like you said, Matt, it's a free-for-all with kids, and we need some pull it back moments, and we need some leaders who have led teams to high levels, and they don't need to be the biggest names on the planet. They just need to have done it.
Let me bounce off that real quick. For leadership, you know, Silva being gone next year, Chilwell gone or not, Reece James potentially out injured again at some point. Who's your captain in this squad going into next year?
To me, I think the only logical choice would be Connor if he's still around. That to me, that seems like the logical choice. I don't really see anybody else. I think that's a problem. Maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm like, shrugging again, as I say it.
Again, that's the problem, is you get rid of the veterans. Who else is going to step up and lead this team? Connor, for me, is the best option out of who we have. That's who I would see. But again, that's if we don't sell him. Like, he doesn't want to go, but it, you know, it's ultimately going to be kind of a club decision. That's who I would throw the badge to.
I would tend to agree on that one, except this weekend it really threw me off when he allowed Raheem Sterling to take that penalty. We saw earlier in the year Enzo take the ball out of Raheem Sterling's hands and give it to Cole Palmer. I know the manager says he doesn't have a penalty taker, but the captain should have an influence there. But I think it's got to be up that spine. Parker, you said De Sassi. I think that's a good shout. He captained Monaco. I think Enzo would be a great one. And I think Cole Palmer. I don't think he's necessarily a leader in voice, but everyone seems to respect him. Everybody seems to know that he's about his business out there. And everybody who gets asked about him, within the squad says he's a 1,000 IQ guy. He's just one of the smartest people that they've played with. So again, not a vocal leader, but somebody who can lead by example.
I wouldn't have it be Cole. I'd rather it be Caicedo, to be honest. Some of it's position, like guys that you know are going to be out there for a 90. It's one of the arguments of why a setter is your captain on the floor and not a middle. It's because middles get subbed out, right? But I think Caicedo has a lot of that energy and a lot of that leadership quality as well. I think Cole is just a little bit too quiet. And maybe this is proven out over time, but I just don't think he has that that range of managing other people's emotions or helping his team kind of get through situations like that. But I do like what you said about the Raheem Sterling penalty and that win, because that's something that the team needs to figure out straight away. Because when Cole Palmer's out there and Raheem Sterling's out there, I don't care if Raz won the damn thing. It needs to be designated who's taking that. And I do believe that that is a captain's job to do. Quickly, because we don't have a ton of time, but just open floor, 60 seconds, shit on Raz. It's a safe space here. We can do that. Go ahead.
That free kick he took is catching up to the Voyager 1 or whatever is dying out in space out there. Worst free kick I've ever seen in my life. And I have taken some pretty terrible ones.
Rudiger would be proud. That was Rudy territory. I don't even know what to do with him anymore. It's we see the good, we see the bad, but his bad outweighs his good 9 times out of 10. I don't understand it. I don't know what his issue is. Woof.
He's not hungry. He just doesn't want, he doesn't have that edge to him anymore. And he just doesn't have that gear to take. And I think he still thinks he does, but it's just lacking, and he's lacking confidence. He's lacking form. And I try not to read too much into Poch's comments, but like Poch is going to defend him. And I know that's fine, but he didn't contribute in the match. He was a hindrance in the match. He didn't contribute in a positive way from my perspective. He hurt us, and he's put in more of those performances recently than he has the ones where he's saved us. Can you guys remember a time where Raheem Sterling was our savior, saved us the game or won us the game? Because I can't. And those are adding up in a big way, and he makes too much money to not finish a lot of those chances. Penalty or not, I mean, the penalty got saved, fine, it's a bad penalty, but again why is he taking that free kick? Why isn't Palmer wrapping his left foot around that thing?
When was the last time you heard boos ring out when someone gets subbed out or subbed off? Ooh, subbed out. I can't remember the last time I've seen or heard that Stamford Bridge. That was amazing. And it's amazing the crowd also turned it around and turned it into applause, but the boos were out early there.
So I couldn't believe that he didn't get subbed out first. That was the biggest thing. I saw Carney coming on, and I was like, oh great, Carney Ferraz. I was like typing it in the group chat, and then I saw him come in for Cole. I was like, what is going on? How does he have pictures of Poch cheating on his wife or something? Like what is going on here?
Yeah, I don't understand it. I don't like it. And we talked about this pre-pod. We know Raz is probably going to start the next match. Mudrick's not going to start on the left. That's just the way it is. And we saw this earlier in the season, right? Raz got left out of the England squad, and then he just went on a tear. You would think it would be hopefully the same thing. He missed another call-up. Okay, he's pissed. Apparently, Gareth Southgate knows this and was like, yep, he's just trash. So he's not even going to make the squad. And we expected to see that same fire. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Just, it was tough to watch. And shout out to my dad, Mike. He was asking me how things were after the party, and he goes, yeah, I know you have a lot going on with stuff after the party and people leaving and having to watch Raheem Sterling play. Yep, that's accurate. Just a rough go.
My favorite tweet of the weekend was, if Raheem Sterling shot Tupac, he'd be 53 today.
Amazing.
So good. So good.
If only it weren't true. Oh God. I don't have much else on the list of topics, but one thing I wanted to bring up, just your guys' take. Enzo's been a staple in this team. He's played most minutes of most matches. We didn't see Enzo today, or Saturday, Sunday, whenever this match was, Sunday, because of a yellow card accumulation. So not a squad pick or anything like that. But so we had a little bit of a retool in the middle. Gallagher dropped back and played next to Caicedo, and then Mudryk played in the middle. My question is, did we miss him? And if not, do we, you know, what is his role kind of going forward then?
I don't think we missed him in this one, but we've used the caveat countless times already of, oh, championship opposition. Enzo has been good as of late because he's being played in a more forward position, right? And Caicedo has had to track a lot. He's had to cover that back line plenty, and he's doing a great job of that. But those two as a pair have seemingly figured it out in terms of spacing. Enzo's been involved in countless great attacks over the last couple of weeks. So we didn't miss him, but I think we're finally, quote unquote, unlocking Enzo here now towards the end of the season.
I don't think we missed him at all. I think if anything, it's good from this perspective. We know that we can play without him. That's kind of where I'm looking at it. Like, we know we can play without him, right? The point that you made, Collins, about we're finally kind of playing him in the right position and kind of giving him the correct amount of freedom to be able to do what he's best at, I think is big. The thing that I don't like, and I will call it the Jorginho effect, is when he has to drop so far back that he's basically trying to build everything out from the back. Like, all the center backs are looking for him, and then nobody else moves. Like, Caicedo doesn't move, Gallagher doesn't move, Mudryk, whoever, they don't move, and then we're just kind of kicking the ball around, but we're still trying to find Enzo on everything, hoping that he can get us out of it. I think that's where my issue is, and that's not an Enzo problem. I think that's just a tactics thing and just how we utilize him. When we start doing that, then that's when I get pissed off. It's good to see that we can still move forward without having to rely on just one person. And I think that's kind of where Collins, you and I have gone back and forth on my lack of understanding or my lack of appreciation for that position. And I think that's where it kind of boils down to, is there's so much put on that one person that everything has to go through that person for anything to happen. I think with him off the pitch, still being able to see that we can move the ball forward, we can advance it, we can still be creative. We're not solely dependent on one person. I think that's a big takeaway for the Chelsea squad.
Yeah, I like both of your guys' takes on this. I think Gallagher's kind of dynamic aspect to his game allows us to shift things around and not really miss players when they're out, because let's be honest, we have to rest players in a crowded season. We don't even have European football to congest our schedule, and we still have to do it. So Gallagher dropping back, and then ironically it allows Mudryk to play a position that I think all of us think is he's excelled a little bit more in, where he's playing a little bit more centrally. It means Raheem Sterling has to play on the left, which we don't like, but I think, you know, that push-pull of how our squad kind of does some of these when players go out, I think it shows more good than bad for what this team is. The fact that we can kind of morph a little bit the way we play, put guys in different positions, because Gallagher brings something different to that Enzo role. Mudryk brings something different than Gallagher in the 10, you know, that forward looking 10 role. And so we have some pieces to play with, which is nice. And I like it. And then all of that to say, I still miss seeing Enzo out there. Enzo's been kind of a security blanket with Caicedo, and the partnership that those two guys have been forming has been really fun to watch this season. And I've enjoyed watching them play off of each other. So I missed that aspect, but from a team perspective and how we played and how we looked, I thought we got by pretty well and kind of, you know, took that all in stride. So happy to see we can do it. It'll be interesting to see, you know, if we're at full strength. Which I don't think we'll ever be full at strength, right, guys? We'll always have at least one or two injuries, but like an Nkunku could play as a striker, and then a Jackson could play on the left wing. And I think that looks a lot more fun of a lineup to me, instead of having Raheem Sterling out there. And, you know, Cole can play in a couple of positions. Mudryk can play in a couple of positions. Gallagher can play everywhere but keeper, let's call it that. And, you know, it's starting to look like a fun team. It's starting to look like a team that can do some things. Gusto can play either wing. Raheem, all of our guys can kind of.
Raz can sit on either side of the bench. Very versatile in that regard.
He can clap left-handed, right-handed. You know, he can do both. Right, yeah. as he collects his 380 British pounds, 1,000 British pounds a week, whatever that number is.
Yeah, I mean, but so one thing is, as I was watching the match, and this goes back to my lack of understanding and appreciation for that role. And this isn't a knock on Enzo at all. I didn't even notice that he wasn't out there. Like, I didn't notice that he was like not even playing. I just didn't notice it. And that's not to say that he's not important or anything like that. Like, that's not saying that. We were just moving the ball well and advancing it, you know, even without him. That I just didn't even notice until somebody had mentioned it on the telecast. I'm like, oh yeah, I guess Enzo's not out there. I did just never really crossed my mind. But again, that's more of the team aspect, I think, than it is, you know, the individual qualities that Enzo, you know, we've seen time and time again, what he can provide. But just that knowing and understanding that we can still be creative, we can still be attack minded, even without him out there, I think is a big win for us.
So what percentage has Enzo and Caicedo lived up to their 250 million pound mark? How, you know, you see all those charts where we're raising money and they put the little stickies on there to cover it up. Where are those two on that?
On my scale, I think they're in the sort of 70-ish, mid-70s percentage. I think that this is the worst you're going to see of them. Point blank, I think this is going to be their worst season in Chelsea uniforms. I think their seasons going forward will get better. And the talent around them will get better as this project kind of develops and morphs and goes forward. They've been better as they've figured things out. I think they have the ability to get better going forward. So today, I think it's good, not great. Has the ability, though, it still has the ability to look like a steal in 3-4 years. I still firmly believe that.
Yeah, I was thinking along those same lines. I was going to say right around 70. I think Enzo has earned more of that. Has earned a little bit more than Caicedo. The big thing for me is just once Enzo finds that shooting range, once he's able to do that, then I think it's easy. He's worth every penny. Caicedo, again, I agree with you, Parker. I think we're seeing the worst version of him, just with coming over, trying to learn that new partnership, figure all that stuff out. We're seeing some good. We still see a little bit of kind of, I don't want to call it inexperience, but a little bit of just kind of looking a bit lost at times. We still see a little bit of that, not as much as we did early on, but he's definitely growing and getting more comfortable in this system. So, I like that number at about 70%.
I'd put it there. But I think Caicedo has carried more of the weight in that. Enzo, last year, make whatever you want out of that. This year he's had his ups and downs. His ups have been very up and his downs have been pretty down. But Caicedo, since about week 7, has been N'Golo Kanté out there. He's been all over the place. He's been covering that back line by himself back there. He tracks everywhere. Distribution has been great. His runs have been pretty good. And then he gets a yellow card. And oh my God, he is on another planet. He's never from another planet. I think Caicedo is flown under the radar by large margins here.
Well, boys, that brings us up-ish against the hour. Collins, I don't know how you do this. This is a lot of talking. I'm not used to this. This is a weird chair for me to be in tonight, but happy to host the pod and happy to get together with you guys, even if it's on a Tuesday and chat. We've got good news to talk about. I'm not wasting an opportunity to talk about it because we got to celebrate our wins. They've been, I don't want to say few and far between, but they haven't been as frequent as most fans have wanted it to be this year. So appreciate everyone tuning in. If you made it this far, thank you. You can follow us on socials at Flag Down Pod, wherever you get your podcasts. Shout us out to a friend or two. Grow the audience. We like spreading our bullshit to everybody. And we like the interaction with the community. I think all of us like getting together and talking about it because it's fun for us, but it's also fun to interact with Chelsea fans. It's fun to go to the bar and hang out with people and like-minded folks. I like wearing Chelsea jerseys out in public just so people will be like, "Hey, Chelsea, yeah," or "Hey, Chelsea, fuck you." Either way, you get a reaction and it's all good either way. So appreciate that. And any words to close on, boys?
Great job hosting.
Fuck the international break.
Fuck the international break and shout out to 75-inch TVs in Matt's basement. Cheers, boys.
Cheers.